Change is not progress. From an exhortation by Brother Robert Roberts, originally entitled The Fleeting World, as reproduced in the testimony for January 1995. Be steadfast, immovable. Such is one of the leading exhortations of the truth. It would seem as if it ought to be a very easy duty to be steadfast. In truth, we have a special inability in the contrary direction. Steadfastness, sufficiently prolonged, it goes against the natural grain. The human mind tires of monotony, just as the body tires of one position. It is pleasant to have a change for mere change's sake. Hence, new things have an attraction for many people who resemble the ancient Athenians in nothing else. New things may be all right, but they may be much the reverse. They may be a mere appeal to the weakness that tires of one's mental attitude. A liking for them, regarded as a symptom of intellectual superiority, may be due to a mere love of change, such as marks and constitutes the shallow and the fickle mind. The change of fashion from age to age in every department of human activity is the result of this. Taste roves and returns in an endless whirligig of change. God changes not, and his children partake of this characteristic. Enlightened and well-balanced intelligence stably rests in that which is true and eternal. It is the mark of wisdom to be established, to be steadfast, to abide in the same thing from year to year as time rolls. Of course, this presupposes the attainment of truth. Pilate asked what this was, and he did not wait for the answer. Those who know the gospel know the truth and recognize the wisdom of being steadfast, immovable. In this connection, change is not progress. In divine things, change is always more likely to be retrogression than progress. The inherent tendency of the natural mind is to indulge in thoughts and fancies in harmony with its own predilections, which are opposed to divine thoughts and ways. and as the process is combined with the pleasing sensation of the relief that comes from variety, it has resulted in past ages of the world's history, first in slight declension and then in complete apostasy from the ways of God. As in the case of Israel in Canaan after the death of Joshua, and 1500 years afterwards in the case of the Christian community when the apostles had all gone to their graves. How are we to foster this invaluable quality of steadfastness on which our ultimate depends? As much as on the reception of the gospel at the first. Study will furnish the answer. Steadfastness, like every other faculty of the mind, grows by use and rusts by neglect. Its power in this respect doubtless depends in some measure on native organization. Some have naturally more stability of mental action than others. Still, the ultimate attainments of every man depend in greater measure on the daily play of mental forces in the direction of which all of us have some voice. The permanence of mental impression in any direction depends upon continuousness of contact with that which makes the impression in the first instance. Take the most familiar example. A man remembers powerfully the place he lives in, the people he moves among, the calling he follows. How is it that he knows and remembers these so well, while his mind is a total blank to the house and friends and occupation of a man in the next town? It is because his mind is in contact with the one set of facts and not with the other. But take him away from his own town and his own surroundings, transport him to a distant country and plant him down among other scenes and other neighbours, and you would see a change by and by. His impressions of his former circumstances will gradually fade until, if you give him long enough time, they would disappear. Continuousness of impression in divine things, steadfastness in the faith, depends upon habitual contact with the facts and evidences that generated them in our hearts in the first case. In the first century, these would consist of what we might have seen and heard at the hands of the apostles. In our age, they consist of the writings that God has caused to be written to this very end, the scriptures, which are able to make us wise unto salvation. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but the companions of fools shall fall He that readeth wise books shall be wise. And the wise book, above all others, is God's book, the Bible, wherein alone are exhibited to us those disclosures of the divine thoughts and purposes which, when we make them our property by reading and mental assimilation, give us steadfastness in a world of caprice and change. How necessary this is, experience will show us. From human books, we do not easily get away, because we have a natural affinity for things that men, like ourselves, discourse of. But with a book of divine authorship, it is different. Divine thoughts are fundamentally different from human thoughts. There is not the same natural response to them in our own hearts, and we naturally fail to cling close to plans and principles so far above us in favour of those that commend themselves to mere human instincts and preferences and sympathies. And so much the more need is there for continuousness of contact with the book containing them. This contact will overcome natural antipathy and engender affinity where repulsion originally existed.